still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man.
WMFO, Medford.
Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran.
Happy Wednesday afternoon. This is Watch This. I am not Chris Earle. I am, in fact, Derek Carey, the host of The Big Picture, and I will be hosting The Big Picture later tonight at 7 o'clock with Shea Spillane. But for the next 2 hours, it is my honor to sit in and join you on this Wednesday afternoon, talk about movies, because movies are awesome, and you should go and see them. Coming up later in this show, I'm going to count down my 5 favorite superhero movies of all time. And I'm also going to dig into this Steven Spielberg Netflix controversy. This is a case where both sides are right. You may have heard that Steven Spielberg thinks Netflix shouldn't get Oscars, while some other filmmakers think Netflix should because it's good for movies. It depends on how you define movies, and it depends on how you define cinema. We're going to take a look at that, and I'm going to tell you five movies that you absolutely, at some point in your life, if you are able, you must experience in the cinema. So, the big story this week in movies is Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel, the fifth best March movie opening of all time. Did well, despite the threatened boycotts and despite the weak trailers and despite all of the general noise and nonsense that goes around this movie. And the question becomes, is it a good movie? Because we can ask this question now. Is Captain Marvel actually a good movie? It's made $180 million at the domestic box office so far. And it's made over $500 million worldwide. So it is a success. It is making money, which is what Disney wants it to do. Is it a good movie? Now, I know a lot of people were on the fence about whether or not they want to see this film. And I know that the online reviews don't help. We actually had one reviewer come out and say, I occasionally pad my reviews because I am an access journalist. What does that mean? That means that in order for me to have a career online, I need tickets to the previews. I need Disney to call me and say, you get to come to the advanced screening of Captain Marvel and Star Wars and Beauty and the Beast and Dumbo and The Jungle Book and Aladdin and everything else, because I make all of my money. I get all of my hits within the first, 2 days after a movie comes out. So if I'm not out there first, then I don't make any money. And if Disney doesn't invite me to the previews, then I'm not out there first. So I can't really say what I think about the movie. Well, that's a problem, isn't it? Like, back in the day, it used to be that film critics all worked for newspapers. Some of them worked for radio or television stations, but the majority of them worked for print newspapers. And the movie studios would hold press screenings, and they would invite the critics from the newspapers to these press screenings. Everybody got to go. That is not necessarily the model anymore. Big newspapers do still have critics who get invited to the press screenings, but the broader source of reviews these days, the greater number of reviews, comes from websites. It comes from bloggers. It comes from people who don't hold press credentials. These are, not entirely, but a lot of them are, access journalists. They have worked themselves into a position where they have a large enough following and enough credibility that movie studios will send them tickets to the press screening or passes to an advanced screening so that they can see the movie along with the big newspaper film critics and get their review out online at the same time as the critics. Why do movie studios do this? Well, because as the film critic admitted late last week, I pad my reviews. I say nice things about movies that I don't necessarily like because I can't afford to lose my access. Disney, Fox, Paramount, Warner Brothers, all the studios understand how this works. Everybody understands how influencer marketing works, which is you are beholden to me because I've given you something for free. No one cares about your credibility. No one cares about whether or not you're being honest. We like having these influencers around. We like having access journalists around because we can control them. They're going to say nice things about our movies, even if the people who write reviews professionally don't say nice things about our movies. And the ultimate decider in all of this is the Rotten Tomatoes score and the Metacritic score. And this is how you get to a point, by the way, where The Last Jedi winds up with this awesome score and, you know, 92, and all the critics love it. And then the audience goes and sees it, and they're like, what the heck is this? I did not like this movie. I don't understand how it got this score. And then everybody starts talking about conspiracy theories, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Captain Marvel is currently, it's dropped, actually, on Rotten Tomatoes. It's currently sitting at a 79% from 405 reviews. That is still enough to be certified fresh, but it is on the verge of tipping below that. The audience score right now is 63%. Not a big swing. But as somebody who used to review films for a newspaper, I did that in a previous life. As somebody who is not concerned with access, I go and see the movies just like everybody else. I'm going to give you my two cents on Captain Marvel. And this is, let me start by saying two things. Number one, I don't care about the politics. I don't care about all the nonsense that goes around this. Although it is difficult, it is very difficult to just go and see a movie like Captain Marvel without that rattling around in the back of your head. There has been so much online noise for and against this movie over the last few months that it's surprising to me that a larger number of audience members don't simply walk away from it because it's too much work just to go and see it. You know, it's too much work just to sit there and have an opinion of the thing. Well, to the best of my knowledge, I approach this as unbiased as possible. It's a movie I wanted to see. I love the Marvel movies. I think they do a great job consistently. The worst Marvel movies tend to be better than the best DC movies. So Captain Marvel, it's fine. And that's really the kindest thing that I can say about it, is it's fine. If you are inclined to like this movie because you like its themes, because you like its politics, because you like the idea of women superheroes, then you're probably going to enjoy it. If you are inclined to dislike this movie, or if you find yourself having problems with things in the movie, it is going to give you lots of reasons to dislike it. It is going to be somewhat polarizing, and in the end of the day, it's ultimately a meh. It's ultimately not worth getting worked up over because it's good, it's fine, it's adequate. So let me break down a little bit of why that is. There are two primary issues with Captain Marvel. The first is Brie Larson, and not her politics, not who she is. It is the casting of Brie Larson. Brie Larson, in some ways, is a good choice for Captain Marvel. In some ways, she is a terrible choice for Captain Marvel. There are certain aspects of this character that she plays well, and you mostly get that toward the end of the film. There are a lot of aspects of this character that she just doesn't play well. And watching it, I kept thinking to myself, you know, what if you had Beverly Hills Cop era Brigitte Nielsen playing Captain Marvel? Somebody who was, you know, a tough, strong, forced to be reckoned with woman who also could have a certain amount of femininity and vulnerability about her. What if you had Charlize Theron playing Captain Marvel? That would be incredible casting. Brie Larson is not it. Brie Larson does not cut it. And there is a moment in this movie that illustrates that very, very clearly. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there's one moment in this movie that you're going to look at it and you're going to be like, oh, wow, yeah. Because you only really see it in the context of other actors. And for most of this movie, all of the other actors are doing everything they can to support and elevate Brie Larson. So that's problem number one. I don't think she was a good choice for this role. I think there were better actresses that you could have had play this role. I don't know if they reached out to Charlize Theron and she said no, or she was doing Fast and Furious at the time, or whatever was going on. I would have loved to have seen her take on Captain Marvel because I think she's more of what this character needs. The second problem that you have here is this is not a movie in the traditional sense. This is a series of moments and scenes that are strung together that barely manage to tell a coherent story. And to understand this, you need to understand the problem with Disney. You may not know this, but Disney has never won a Best Picture Oscar. This is a studio that's been around for 85 years now, 86 years, I believe, has been making movies for that long, has never won a Best Picture Oscar. The best Oscar they ever won was Julie Andrews, Best Actress for Mary Poppins. And then Mark Rylance won Best Supporting Actor for Bridge of Spies a few years ago. The only other major Oscars, like the above the line, like serious artistic Oscars that they've ever won, are Best Film Editing, again for Mary Poppins, and also for Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Now, you can sit back and say, well, but they win Best Animated Short every year, and they win Best Animated Feature every year. Yes, they do, because those awards were created by the Academy to reward Disney. Because Disney does not make movies. They don't. Disney makes something that I like to call processed film entertainment. It's a little bit like processed cheese food. You ever buy Kraft Singles at the supermarket? It won't say, they're not cheese. It says right there on the package, processed cheese food, okay? Which means it's kind of like cheese. It's got similarities to cheese, but it's not really cheese. You know, there's milk and whey and, you know, things in it that look and taste like cheese. But if you put it next to actual cheddar, there's no comparison. One has flavor and texture and deliciousness, and the other is a piece of wax that's colored orange and has a similar mouthfeel to cheese. This is what Disney does. Disney makes processed film entertainment. It's like a movie. It's made in some of the same ways as a movie, but it has been stripped and denuded of all of the risks, all of the magical possibilities that make a movie cinema. It is processed film entertainment. A bunch of executives have sat around and engineered this film within an inch of its life. This is a manufactured blockbuster. And it is incredibly apparent in Captain Marvel that this is what happened. When you watch the film, you will walk away feeling that a good 20 to 30 minutes of it wound up on the cutting room floor. And if you watch the early trailers and you see scenes that aren't in this final movie, you know that at least some of it wound up on the cutting room floor. What is left behind holds together barely, but creates some very, very serious problems. It creates problems in the narrative. It creates problems in the pacing. It creates problems in understanding where these characters are and what they're doing. Very early on in the film, we're out on some distant planet that we've never heard of. A couple of minutes later, we're on Earth. So clearly there has been a massive bit of travel that's taken place. And we're told by one of the characters that that travel takes 23 hours. This is a line in the film. It takes 23 hours to get from that planet to Earth, hopping through space. And yet this is resolved in a matter of minutes of screen time. Something has been left out here. And there are just little things like this that keep happening throughout the movie. Brie Larson never entirely gels with Samuel L. Jackson. There's a forced awkwardness to their relationship with each other. It's two actors are in the same scene looking at each other, talking at each other, and not really hearing each other. There are a couple of plot points that are just going to drive you nuts. The most egregious one involves a child telling a parent that the parent will be a better parent if the parent goes into space and dies rather than staying home and taking care of the child. This happens. And these things happen because they push emotional buttons. And that's what this film is really about. This film wants you to feel this at this moment and feel this at that moment and feel something else over here. So what you're left with is this collection of these moments that have been strung together, and it barely holds together as a story. And you'll sit there in the theater and you'll say, all right, you know, that's okay. That's good. I enjoyed that. And you'll think about it the next day and you'll be like, wait a minute. What the heck was that? And what the heck was that? And what the heck was that? Sort of the same problem that you had with The Last Jedi, only there's nothing as egregious in this as there is with The Last Jedi. The one other thing that I'm going to point out in this, and I don't want to drag Brie Larson. Brie Larson is a terrific actress. And, you know, if she wants to have opinions and she wants to say things, that's her prerogative. She's a human being. She's got the right to say whatever she wants. If fans want to get bent out of shape about it, I don't know. Is she attacking you personally? Is she attacking anyone personally? No and no. Get over it. Go see the movie if you like these movies. One of the problems that Brie Larson has with playing this character is that the character of Captain Marvel is undefined. When you think about comic book characters, for me, the greatest origin story of all time is Batman. And Batman is going to be 80 years old at the end of this month. Tells you they did it better then than we do it today, I suppose. But everybody knows the Batman origin story. Batman is is the son of one of the wealthiest people in Gotham City. And coming home from the theater one night, he sees his parents gunned down by a street thug. This changes Bruce Wayne's life forever. Not just because he doesn't have his parents anymore, but because he witnessed it and was powerless to do anything about it. And it changes his psyche. Bruce Wayne breaks in that moment. And you now have this schizophrenia of Bruce Wayne, which is the identity of Bruce Wayne, which he must maintain because everybody knows who he is and that's his access to money, and the identity of Batman. Batman is born in that moment when his parents are killed. And it's a great and compelling story. And as a writer or as an actor, when I say this is somebody who's acted, I've acted in film, I'm going to be on stage early May. As an actor, you look at the character of Bruce Wayne slash Batman and you say to yourself, okay, I have something to hang on to here. Let me get into this. Let me walk around inside this guy's head and see if I can figure out what's what. Captain Marvel does not have a consistent origin story. Marvel Comics has tried several different times to explain who she is. They have never come up with a consistent theory or a consistent origin of who she is. So here we have a Captain Marvel origin film, which is what this is, only Marvel Comics itself doesn't know what the character's origin is. So the filmmakers are now stuck in this corner where they want to say Captain Marvel is this or Captain Marvel is this. And Marvel's saying, yeah, you know, we really don't know. And picture poor Brie Larson coming into this. What do you work with? What do you have to go on? She starts the movie as somebody who has lost all of her memories. She ends the movie as basically the same character with a couple of her memories back and free from the things that were blocking her memories. But there's no change. There's no real change there. You know, there's no real explanation for who she is or why she's going to do what she does or what she might do in the future. So that puts her as an actress at a massive disadvantage and really raises the question of why you are making a movie about a character that you don't understand. And the answer is because Marvel needed a female-led film. For whatever reason, they don't want to make the Black Widow movie, even though other people are out making that movie now. Atomic Blonde is the Black Widow movie. There's been a couple of these other, you know, female assassin movies out in the last couple of years, one of which I believe was based on a treatment for a Black Widow movie. Everybody wants the Black Widow movie. Everybody wants to see Scarlett Johansson's origin story and watch Scarlett Johansson kick butt the way that she does in the Avengers movies. Marvel won't do it. So the only other major female character you have is Captain Marvel. Problem is, well, we don't know who that character is. We just know that she is the most powerful character in the Marvel Universe, and we got to get her a movie. Somebody made some bad decisions here, is what I'm saying. And unfortunately, Brie Larson is the one who suffers for it because she is talented. Even with all of that character background, I don't think she's the right person to play Captain Marvel. And I think this becomes apparent when you see the film. But if you, as I said, if you are inclined to like this movie, you are going to like this movie. If you are inclined to dislike this movie, it will give you plenty of reasons to hate it. I think for the vast majority of people out there, it's a nice appetizer before Avengers Endgame, which is going to be coming our way at the end of April. So I won't tell you not to see it. I won't tell you to go out of your way to see it. On a see it, rent it, skip it scale, it's a see it because these Marvel movies always tend to be fun on the big screen. But, you know, if something else in the theater catches your eye, maybe you see that instead. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is Watch This with Chris Earle. I'm not Chris Earle. I'm Derek Gary. And I'm going to be with you until 7 o'clock tonight. When we come back, Going to be playing some of my favorite movie soundtrack music during the breaks on tonight's show. When we come back, superhero movies, there are lots of good ones. I'm going to count down my five favorite of all time, and no, Captain Marvel is not among them. This is WMFO Medford.
You come running, pushing time out of reason, out of rhyme. Bits and pieces of your past cling like shadows to your heels, and your heart is learning fast. In your eyes and your feelings in disguise, you come running in your fright, seeking shelter from the night, and you search each passing face for a sign someone could care, but they rush back in their rage.
Spin through the sky in a dance of death. Their target, one man in a flying arsenal that fits in two alligator suitcases. The odds, 4-1. They haven't got a chance.
Now. Sean Connery is
is James Bond in Ian Fleming's You Only Live Twice. Sean Connery, James Bond, 007, You Only Live Twice. An Albert R. Broccoli, Harry Saltzman presentation in Panavision Technicolor from United Artists, a Transamerica company. You Only Live Twice, and twice is the only way to live.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Intermission.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is Watch This with Chris Earle. I am not Chris Earle. I am Derek Gary with you until 7 o'clock tonight when the big picture will be here with the latest local, national, entertainment, sports, news, and commentary. Stick around for that because I'll be doing that as well with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. The Love Unlimited Orchestra is playing us into this in the background. If you can find yourself a copy of the album Super Movie Themes, just a little bit different, highly, highly recommended. Good album. Good stone cold grooves. Really, really, really good cover of the Superman theme on that album from the Love Unlimited Orchestra. That was the guy that did the theme from Shaft. His name escapes me at the moment. It shouldn't. He's legendary. It will come to me later. At the top of the show, talked about Captain America. Meh. You know, it's processed film entertainment from Disney. Therefore, you know, keep your expectations in check. Please don't bring logic to the movie theater, and you'll probably enjoy it. Not one of my top superhero movies of all time. Which I am now going to share with you. The superhero genre, such as it is one of the youngest. The first real superhero movies of the modern age only date back to the 1970s. That's when comic books started coming onto the big screen. And then there's a big chunk of time in the 80s and 90s when there aren't a lot of them. There are some important ones, like Tim Burton's Batman is certainly an influential film. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man is an influential film. But there isn't a huge body of superhero films. There were, of course, the Superman serials and the Flash Gordon serials, if you want to call Flash Gordon a superhero, that existed in the early days of cinema. But throughout the 50s and the 60s and the early 1970s, when cinema is becoming, you know, sort of suburban mainstream family entertainment, there's no superheroes in sight. Superheroes are in comic books. Maybe they're on your TV. Maybe you get Batman 1966 and the movie based on the Batman TV series. But there isn't a heck of a lot. That all changes. And superhero movies in the late 2000s and certainly through this decade become huge. This is the golden age right now of superhero movies, not just in terms of quantity, but in many cases in terms of quality. The last movie on my list, number 5, and these are in order from, you know, what I think is the 5th best to the very best. Number 5 on my list is the most recent entry. And in fact, it's only a year old.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
In time, you will know what it's like to lose. To feel so desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man a shield.
Isn't something one considers when balancing the universe. But this does put a smile on my face.
Hot damn, is that a good movie? Wait, is there more to this? Oh, yeah, there's the Guardians of the Galaxy visual payoff at the end of that trailer. Oh, boy, is that a good movie. I would have ranked Avengers Infinity War higher, except for one thing, and that is the fact that you have to see some, not all, but some of the other movies ahead of it to understand everything that's going on in it. And the fact that it's not a standalone makes that a drawback for me. If that wasn't the case, this movie easily could have gone as high as third on my list. And I don't say it does sort of stand on its own. You can go in and watch it. Clearly, I mean, the movie made $1.5 billion at the box office. Not everybody who saw Infinity War had seen Thor Ragnarok or Guardians of the Galaxy or Captain America Civil War or Spider-Man Homecoming. They just went to this because they knew it was going to be this big event superhero movie. I will say that everything in Infinity War is so brilliantly earned. And as much as I will criticize Disney at times for being for producing processed film entertainment instead of movies, I think Kevin Feige, who produces everything from Marvel and has been shepherding all this Marvel Cinematic Universe into existence, has done a spectacular job with it in the way that he's woven all of these stories together and built this thing up so that by the time you get to Avengers Infinity War, and you're seeing this story play out on the screen, everything that is in it feels earned. And even if you, and really feels earned if you have seen the previous movies. If you haven't seen the previous movies, the moments in Infinity War still pack a punch. The other thing I love about Infinity War is it has one of the most complex villains that we've seen in any kind of a superhero movie to date. Villains tend to be straight up bad guy. I want to control the world. You know, I want to destroy the universe. I want to see the world burn. Whatever it is, there's some kind of one-dimensional or two-dimensional evil that, you know, the good characters should be able to rally together and find a way to defeat. Thanos, who is the villain of Infinity War, is not as simple as that. Thanos is a little bit like what the Empire has become in the Star Wars mythology, where if you listen to what he's saying, he kind of has a point. And you may disagree with his solution, You may disagree with his decision that half of the universe needs to stop existing, but you can't really disagree with the outcome that he gets and his broader goals for wanting to do this. Thanos is about sustainability. Thanos is about solving the problems of hunger and need and want in the universe. He has a particularly barbaric and some would say evil. I don't know if it rises to evil, but it's certainly barbaric. He has a barbaric solution to this problem, and that makes him the bad guy. But he's not doing this because he wants to rule. He's not doing this because he just wants to kill a bunch of people. He's doing this because he believes this is the only way that the universe can survive. And that makes him a great character. And that makes him a great foil for Tony Stark and everybody else who's in this. Highly recommend it. It's, the sequel's coming out next month. It's on Netflix if you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you're like one of the few. Like, go see the silly Avengers movie already, because it's great. Coming in at number two on my list goes back to 2004. Another character from the Marvel Universe, but this one not yet part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I believe there's a hero in all of us. Gives us strength, makes us noble. Even though sometimes we have to give up the thing we want the most.
Parker!
Where you been? Looking for you all morning?
You're late.
Always late!
You're fired!
Look at you, Peter. Your grades have been declining. You always appear exhausted.
I know, I'm trying.
So where you been, pal? You don't return my calls.
I've been kind of busy.
Taking pictures of your friend?
Spider-Man killed my father.
No matter what I do.
Do you love me or not?
No matter how hard I try.
I want Spider-Man dead.
It's the ones I love who will always be the ones who pay.
I can't keep thinking about you. I'm getting married.
I want a life of my own. I'm Spider-Man. No more.
You look different.
I let things get in the way before. There was something I thought I had to do. I don't have to.
I like seeing you tonight, Peter.
Now onto the main event.
Octavius is gonna put Oscorp on the map in a way my father never even dreamed of.
Crazy scientist turns himself into some kind of a monster. Four mechanical arms welded right onto his body.
You take Spider-Man's pictures. Where is he?
It's taken me off your loyalty to Spider-Man and not your best friend. Bring Spider-Man to me.
How do I find him?
Peter Parker.
Find Spider-Man, or I'll peel the flesh off her bones.
There are bigger things happening here than me and you.
The Sam Raimi Spider-Man films are hugely important in the development of superhero cinema. They are the bridge between the practical effects superhero films of the 80s and the 1990s and the CGI-driven superhero films that we take for granted today. Spider-Man 2 is without a question the best of the three Sam Raimi films. We all know that 3 was not a good movie. Number one is good, but it has to grapple with the origin story. And the origin story kind of gets in the way of the film being everything that it could be. Number two, you don't have to worry about the origin story. We can just take these characters and we can have fun. And that's exactly what they do. Alfred Molina is fantastic as Dr. Octopus in this movie. Kirsten Dunst is tolerable as Mary Jane Watson in this movie. Everybody in it is having a good time. Everybody in it is doing a great job. James Franco is tolerable in this movie as well. It's got so much going for it. Now, the one drawback on it is, yes, it is the middle part of a trilogy, and there are things in the film that call back to the first movie, and there are things in the film that set up the third movie, but they're kind of incidental to the main story that's being told, which is the rise of Dr. Octopus, and also Peter Parker really struggling with this idea of, do I want to be Spider-Man, and is it worth being Spider-Man if I have to give up everything in my life that's meaningful to me? It is very much a coming-of-age story, and it is very much a good encapsulation of the hero's journey. For all those reasons, and the fact that it is just so flat-out entertaining, I will put Alfred Molina up there as one of the most entertaining superhero villains or supervillains ever put on screen. Anytime this movie shows up on cable, if I see even a snippet of it, I am going to watch it. It's the kind of film that you will reach for on a Saturday afternoon when it's raining and be like, let's watch Spider-Man 2. It's a good time. It's everything that's sort of good about the CGI superhero movies. Have the special effects aged well? No. No special effects have. Guess what? The special effects that we love in Avengers Infinity War are going to look like crap 20, 30 years from now. So it's not quite up to today's level, but when you sit there and you watch the Sam Raimi films, you can understand how the Marvel Cinematic Universe starts to be conceived and starts to come together and is going to follow a certain set of rules for how you develop these three-part stories. Number three on my list, look, this is, some of these are just pure fun. And for pure fun, purely entertaining superhero movies, hard to beat this guy.
We can fight this.
You're right. The cancer's only my liver, lungs, prostate, and brain. All things I can live without.
What if I told you we can make you better? You're a fighter. We can give you abilities most men only dream of. Make you a superhero.
You just promise you'll do right by me, so I can do right by someone else.
And please don't make the super suit green or animated.
One thing that never survives this place is a sense of humor.
We'll see about that, Posh Spice.
Oh, come on. You gonna leave me all alone here with less angry Rosie O'Donnell?
Hey, yeah, I wanna shoot. Baby.
Packed in your stack, especially in the back. Brother, wanna thank your mother for a butt like that. Your shotgun bang. What's up with that bang? I wanna know, how does it hang? Mr. Buffer, like Prince Nate, you're a lucky mother.
Wait! You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed. This guy's got the right idea. He wore the brown pants. Cue the music.
X go, give it to you. Wait for you to get it.
What the?
X go, deliver to you. Red with the enemy. No matter how many caps I break, red with a flexi enemy.
Reeks like old lady pants in here.
Why such a douche this morning?
Oh, God, you are hard to look at. You look like the topographical map of Utah.
Exactly.
I am very turned on right now. You are haunting. You look like an avocado had sex with an older avocado. Thank you.
Greetings, Munchkins. Did you like that dose of Green Band goodness? Hankering for a little more action? Some big boy curse words, maybe? Check out DeadpoolWebsite.com for my Red Band trailer. Make sure to ask your mommy and tell her to call me. She's got the number.
Ryan Reynolds, the one and only Deadpool. One thing if you may not notice, if you've only seen this movie once, is that Deadpool does take place in the same universe as the Avengers. And this is surprising because Deadpool is a Fox film and all the others are Disney. But the climax of Deadpool does tie into things that happen in the Avengers movies. Interesting. Listen, every genre needs parody. And that trailer does not do justice to how great Deadpool is. Deadpool is the ultimate tongue-in-cheek, filthy parody superhero movie that we've all wanted at one time or another. It doesn't take itself seriously at all. And it goes out of its way to be wacky while still respecting the basic rules of the superhero universe. It is fun from beginning to end. Highly, highly recommended. Definitely not for the kids. But a film that is just so entertaining in so many ways. From the superhero action to the comedy. If you have a sense of humor, you have to see it. And if you don't like Deadpool, I know those people exist. I know there are people who are like, I don't like Deadpool. Well, if you don't like Deadpool and you haven't seen it, go see it and then decide that you don't like it. If you have seen it and you don't like it, comedy is subjective. I happen to be somebody who adores Deadpool and all of the wacky antics of Ryan Reynolds around the Deadpool movies. Deadpool 2, also great. For my money, one of the best trailers of all time because of the way that the trailer connects to the movie. And that's something that you just don't see anyone do anymore. There is a level of meta understanding in this whole Deadpool thing that just makes it a big cut above a lot of comedy and some superhero movies. So that's number three on my list of the five greatest superhero movies of all time. Coming in at number two, this is the film that starts it all. I'm not kidding when I say that.
My friends, I'm not given to wild, unsupported statements. And I tell you that we must evacuate this planet immediately.
Jor-El, be reasonable.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good. Tragic moment, that world was destroyed. But there was one survivor.
Now, wouldn't that beat all Get Out?
Because of the wisdom and compassion of Jor-El, because he knew the human race had the capacity for goodness, he sent us his only son. His name is Kal-El. He will call himself Clark Kent. But the world will know him as Superman. This year, Superman brings you the gift of flight. Superman, the movie.
Superman the movie, this is where it all begins. Without Superman the movie, you have no Tim Burton Batman films. You have no Sam Raimi Spider-Man films. You have no Marvel Cinematic Universe. In 1978, Richard Donner laid out a roadmap. It wasn't just Superman the movie. It was a franchise. It was a multi-part story that was going to begin with Superman the movie. Superman 2 picks up on that story immediately after Superman the movie and continues it. Unfortunately, Richard Donner got fired in the middle of Superman 2 because they didn't like the way he was making the movie. And a lot of the connective tissue, not all of it, but a lot of it between those two films kind of got thrown out in the final cut that made it into theaters. You can solve this problem today and get a better understanding of both of these movies if you go look for the Blu-ray of Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, which restores as much of his original footage, including Marlon Brando, Marlon frickin' Brando, kids, to Superman 2. There's a whole history behind that and a whole separate set of things behind that. What's important here is to understand what this film represents. Superman 2 sets the template. We have a recognizable character that performs well in other forms of media. Superman, by 1978, has been in comic books. He's been in the Sunday newspapers. He's been on television. He's even been in movie serials. But he has never been in a feature film. Special effects post-Star Wars are now at a point where you can make Superman's flight realistic. Miniature photography is at a point where you can do a lot of things that would have been unthinkable just a few years earlier. So all the technology is there. The character is there. So Richard Donner says, we're not just going to do one story. We're going to build a franchise out of this, okay? We're going to make a connected series of movies that tell the story the same way comic books tell the story. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to get good writers for this. He goes and gets Mario Puzo, the guy that wrote The Godfather, wrote the first two Superman movies, wrote the first one, contributed to the second one. Again, Richard Lester comes in at the studio's request and kind of rips all of this stuff up. Richard Donner gets his revenge by making the Lethal Weapon franchise. So we're going to get one of the best writers we can get. We're going to get name actors to play these roles. Again, Marlon frickin' Brando is in this movie. Marlon Brando is playing Jor-El. That's one of the biggest names in Hollywood. This is Marlon Brando coming off the set of Apocalypse Now and going and doing Superman, the movie, and Superman 2. Marlon Brando. You got Gene Hackman in this, playing Lex Luthor. You got Ned Beatty in this. These are big-time names. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a great writer. I'm going to cast really, really well-known and talented Hollywood actors in these key roles. And then I'm going to go get some people who aren't really known to play the heroes. I'm going to get Margot Kidder, who's had a couple of good movies under her belt, but isn't really a superstar, to play Lois Lane. I'm going to go get Christopher Reeve, who, again, he's done some stuff, isn't super well known. He's going to be Superman. And for my generation, Christopher Reeve is Superman. Other people have played him since, but we are always going to compare them to Christopher Reeve and say, you know what? He's not as good as Christopher Reeve. Chris Reeve is our guy. Does any of this sound familiar? I'm going to get a great writer. I'm going to hire some legendary Hollywood actors. We'll get some new faces to play the heroes. This is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is how Kevin Feige makes Marvel movies. This is how Tim Burton more or less made Batman. And we had a better name, better known actor. Batman went out and made a point of getting well-known star actors to play Batman and may have suffered a little bit for it. Spider-Man followed this. We got Willem Dafoe playing the bad guy, and we've got newcomers playing the kids. The whole thing is laid out here. You see Superman and Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, you will understand exactly how the concept of the superhero franchise was introduced to Hollywood. These movies were hugely successful. They are still incredibly entertaining today. For my money, the fight at the end of Superman 2 between Superman and the three villainous Kryptonians is one of the best things that's ever been put on screen anywhere. And it's all special effects and wildness. And with all the CGI chaos they can do today, nothing is quite as satisfying as that fight from Superman 2. Highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It is my number two superhero movie of all time. What's number one?